Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy news for conservatives. The sun came up again today, Jim, so that's pretty good. Yesterday was a pretty depressing day. We don't actually see the sun here in Washington anymore. We haven't had.
I was about to say, are you sure of that, Greg? It's kind of cloudy, you know.
It's still daylight. It just hasn't been a sunny day for about a week and a half. That should have been an omen for us, I guess. But on to the good martini now, Jim. And other than the senators actually running against Donald Trump at some point during this year's presidential campaign, and a couple of others, I guess, very few have been as vocal about the threat that Donald Trump poses to the conservative movement, the Republican Party, and yes, the nation. The Nebraska freshman Republican Senator Ben Sasse, he's now released an open letter to what he calls Majority America based on four unsolicited conversations from the Walmart yesterday morning. He ran into a retired Union Democratic meat packer that says, what the heck is wrong with that city where you work? A young evangelical mom who wants to cry because she can never tell her kids that she voted for Trump, so she's planning to vote for Hillary. A middle-aged Republican male that says the train car to hell is accelerating. And a Trump supporter that says, I don't like him, I don't trust him, I'm not stupid, but how else can I send a signal to Washington? So that got Ben Sasse thinking. With a number of bullet points, he says neither party works, Americans don't like either party, young people despise the two parties, our problems are huge right now, but the most obvious is that we've not passed along the meaning of America to the next generations. He says our founders didn't want entrenched political parties, so why should we accept this terrible choice? Why shouldn't America draft an honest leader who will focus on 70% solutions for the next 4 years? You know, an adult. Imagine we had a candidate who hadn't spent his or her life in politics, either buying politicians or being bought, who didn't want to stitch together a coalition based on anger but wanted to take a whole nation forward, who pledged to serve for only one term as a caretaker problem solver for this messy moment, who knew that Washington isn't competent to micromanage the lives of free people. He goes on to say, there should really be focus on three or four big problems: national security, honest budgeting and entitlement reform, empowering states and local governments to solve more problems, and getting rid of all the perks for retiring career politicians. He says this shouldn't be that hard. Jim, I agree certainly with about 95% of this. Bravo for Ben Sasse for the courage and for pointing out what Americans are going to miss out when they have the choice of these two candidates.
Yeah, I like you like about 95% of it. It really does read like it's building up to, and I, Ben Sasse, will run as an independent candidate. And then it gets to, no, I got to take care of my kids. Now, some people might look at that and say, lots of folks with small children have run for president before. On the other hand, it's hard to argue with Sasse and his wife if they've kind of decided, you know what, this is not something I want to do with my life right now. Campaign life is rough on children. I don't want to subject my family to this. Having said that, it does seem kind of strange for Sasse to go, I agree with everything you said, Ben Sasse, although I kind of think he's wildly optimistic about how many Americans actually are concerned about entitlement programs. I think most Americans just don't pay any attention to it. The bigger question is that, Greg, is, okay, then who? You just described the perfect guy. Who is that guy? Until we get the Serpentor program working and we can take genetic material from all great leaders throughout history and put, you know, and kind of bake them in the oven and create our perfect cloned leader, we really need you can't beat somebody with nobody. And most of the names that get tossed out there, oh, Condi Rice, oh, Mitt Romney, oh, a couple of retired recently retired generals, look, they've all said they don't want to do it. And, you know, people, oh, well, maybe we can draft them. Well, I mean, you can go to them and say, I think it'd be a really good idea. Please do it. You know, let's do it. But Greg, I'm old enough to remember 1996. Colin Powell has left the military. He comes out with his autobiography. I stood in line, got mine autographed. You know, this was a time where whatever Colin Powell became as Secretary of State and his general sense of supporting Obama today, at that time, man, he was Obama before there was Obama, but he actually was an accomplished military leader. And there was enormous appetite. Please run for president of the United States. Please run as a Republican nominee. Greg, I remember on the show Sequest, because I knew you expected a reference to that today.
Sure.
They made a storyline, which took place in the future, and they made a reference to back during the Colin Powell administration. It was just expected that someday he was going to be president, and he didn't want to do it. And he chose not to do it. And as a result of that, you know, Colin Powell never ran for, you know, you can see there's real, I don't like to spend a lot of time wishing for somebody to run for president once they've said they don't want to do it. And that's just kind of the way it is. So this is all, I agree with everything Sass said, but until we actually have a figure to be that conservative independent, or even as Sass says, not even a down-the-line conservative, just a competent, serious leader, until that figure emerges, this is, you know, this is just wishing instead of planning or coming up with a better alternative.
Yeah, agreed. And his call for a one-termer makes sense. I understand why he's saying that. But that would lead to a lot of gridlock, potentially, if you know that person's name.
I would also point out, Greg, you know, we're probably getting a one-termer anyway. And I'm not even talking about the election. I'm just looking at the actuarial tables. I'm just saying.
Fair enough. The odds are definitely in your favor on that one. All right. On to the bad martini now. And it was just earlier this week that Hillary Clinton did a sit down with Andrea Mitchell over on MSNBC. So, you know, that was a hard hitting, challenging interview. But this was one of the questions that Mitchell asked to Hillary Clinton.
Any indication that your private server was hacked by foreign hackers?
No, not at all.
Not at all. Well, that didn't last very long because Catherine Herridge, who is one of the nicest people in Washington and one of the very best reporters in Washington, had an interview, a jailhouse interview with Guccifer, who has been extradited to the U.S. in recent weeks. And he has a very different story about the Clinton server.
44-year-old Marcel Lahel Lazar, who goes by the moniker Guccifer, claimed it happened in early 2013.
You accessed a lot of accounts, Marcel.
Yeah.
Was the Clinton server easy or hard?
No, for me, what is it? For everybody.
Lazar was extradited to the U.S. from Romania last month to face trial in Alexandria, Virginia for cyber crimes. One of his alleged victims is longtime Clinton aide Sidney Blumenthal. After researching his target, Lazar told Fox he accessed the account by correctly guessing Blumenthal's security question. Then he sent content from the account to the media and for the first time publicly exposed the Clinton email address. While Lazar's claims cannot be independently verified, three computer security specialists told Fox the Clinton server, now in FBI hands, may have an electronic trail that would confirm or disprove his claims.
Jim, we're at the point of, at least right now, until the FBI can confirm whether we believe Hillary Clinton or we believe an admitted hacker. I think I'm leaning towards the hacker.
Well, at least on this topic, right? I mean, compared to this... Wipe it? You mean like with a cloth? Yeah, you know. We've seen the released emails and stuff where she's, you know, begging Huma to help tell her how to turn on the fax machine. Or she emails someone to email someone else to bring her an iced tea. You know, I think this Guccifer guy, you know why I think Guccifer knows about what's hackable and what's not, Greg?
What's that?
Because he's in jail for hacking. That's why. I might say this is the biggest slam dunk since the Iraq war arguments. You know, when people say, oh, how could Bush possibly think that Saddam Hussein was working on biological weapons? Well, the fact that one of the chief scientists was nicknamed Dr. Germ. I don't think they would have called it that because she sneezed a lot. But, you know. So anyway, this guy, Guccifer, you know, like, which always sounds like this combination of like Gucci and Lucifer,
yeah.
Which is probably, you know, the inherent ridiculousness of his nickname probably is one of the reasons people don't take this as seriously as it does. But look, you know, if this guy could get in, you're telling me you don't think the Russian FSB could or China or any of these other regimes? Come on, you know. I mean, chances are they've got everything. If I'm working in the intelligence community in a Hillary Clinton administration, Greg, you know what I'm doing?
What?
Everything I have to show Hillary, I'm putting it on paper, handwritten. There's nothing to hack into. It's not on a disk. You can't put it on your computer. No, you got to look at the actual hard copy, Madam President. That's the only way this is going to work.
Oh, my goodness. Who would have ever thought our downward spiraling into the toilet culture would be a respite in our crazy martini as we head there after
Yay.
The disgusting political news of the week? But yes, here we are with a double header of cultural news in the crazy martini. You might have seen this in the headlines in recent days. We're going to be talking not about maternity leave and paternity leave, but me-ternity leave and paw-ternity leave. Let's start with me-ternity. Megan Foy is a 38-year-old writer who just wrote a novel called Me-ternity. She was once joking with a pregnant friend that she needs a maternity leave. And then she says, but the more I thought about it, the more I came to believe in the value of a me-ternity leave. Which is, to me, a sabbatical-like break that allows women, and to a lesser degree, men, to shift their focus to the part of their lives that doesn't revolve around their jobs. For women who follow a traditional path, this pause often comes naturally in your late 20s or early 30s when a wedding, pregnancy, and babies means that your personal life takes center stage. But for those who end up on the other path, that socially mandated time and space for self-reflection may never come. She says it's wrong that some people have a perfectly valid excuse to leave the office to go pick up their children, while it's not okay for her to go comfort her best friend who just got stood up by an online date.
Those are really comparable, aren't they, Greg?
Yes, exactly, exactly.
You know, if you and I don't get our stuff, like the kids get my kids get left at the after school care, right? And I'm not even going to get into the exorbitant fee where like it goes like a clock attached to a thing running up the bill. Literally every minute I'm late, I'm paying some ungodly amount of money. So if at any point you have been hit by my car as I was racing to pick up my children, I think you can look cost-benefit analysis. You probably paid less for your health care than I paid for the daycare to get there that day. The second real bit, she got stood up. It's every bit as bad. No, I'm pretty sure it's not going to end in child abandonment or child endangerment charges. So no, I don't think that's quite comparable. But I interrupted you, Greg. Carol.
Oh, no, it's fine. It's fine. Let's move on to the Today Show. I mind you, this is a network news show. Here's Matt Lauer.
You know that people, when they're home drinking their wines, consider pets to be just like a child. A handful of employees and employers in Britain are taking that to the next level. Here's what they're doing. They're offering something called paternity. This is a maternity leave of sorts for new pet owners. Anywhere from a couple of hours to a few months. The idea being that animals and their new owners need time to adjust, just like newborns and their parents do.
And here's Savannah Guthrie with her reaction on the Today Show.
It's an interesting idea. I mean, I think that's right. If you have a new pet, it is like having a new baby, and you do need time off. I think the issue is, should your company pay for extended period?
No, it's not like having a new baby. I mean, come on, people. Look at what's going on here. This is obviously quite selfish. If you want to take time off, take a vacation. How many days do you need to bring in a new puppy? If you want to take a vacation to get away from the job, do that. If you think you need longer than that, you can probably take more days but just not get paid for it. If you need more time, quit. And, Jim, I think this is actually insulting to women. You and I have both seen our wives give birth, and maternity leave is not vacation. It is not vacation, anything close to it.
Greg, if you had said to Mrs. Corumbus or I had said to Mrs. Garrity, if I described the maternity leave period as a, quote, pause, unquote, kind of a relaxation time to get it up. Like, clearly this woman has never met any woman who's been on maternity leave. Because a lot of women I know can't wait for maternity leave to end. They can't wait until the child can go to the age-appropriate daycare and someone else will take care of the child. Because, like, Greg, the office, it's clean. Right? No one poops on you. Very rarely at work will someone poop on you. You know, very rarely will your coworkers spit up on you or things like that. Your boss might call you in the middle of the night, but even if he does, he's not going to scream at you. You know, like there's all kinds of joys to work life that you know, the there are two great ironies of this, Greg, and I think you summarized the kind of, you know, back of the envelope look. You get a new pet, you want to take a day, go ahead. You know, you need a little time, go ahead. One of my colleagues is dealing with a pet with very serious health issues, and you can tell this is weighing on this person's mind, and you kind of hope everything turns out okay. They got to take the pet to the vet and things like that. Most bosses will try to be reasonable about circumstances like this, but they believe that you deserve a certain period of time comparable to giving birth to a child. Pretty mind-boggling. And I'll observe something I learned when I was writing the heavy lifting book, Greg. This was back in the, let's say, early to mid-90s. They did a survey of the Fortune 500 CEOs, and they said how much time did they believe was appropriate for a new dad? How much paternity leave did they believe was appropriate for an employee to take? The average answer, Greg, was none. Now, Aya, you're a dad, I'm a dad. We all love spending time with our kids, and I think most of us would say, no, having paternity leave is a good concept. So on the one hand, it's good that employers are starting to recognize the need for work-life balance and trying to be a little more flexible and cooperative with working parents who are trying to do their best with two very important jobs. Having said that, to watch these whiny millennials hopping on our bandwagon and say, well, I deserve time off too. My friend got stood up is really insufferable and unbearable. And do you ever get the feeling Greg, that some people are like, oh, there's got to be some way I can live up to a millennial stereotype. There's got to be some way I can get a ton of attention and create like a bazillion I hate this person Facebook posts. And, you know, if that was her goal, well done, madame. Well done.
I know people love their pets. That's fine that they love their pets. They're not kids. Kids take priority. I'm going to get a ton of bad emails for that, but it's just true.
There's a reason people say pets are members of their family. And as we, you know, as we pointed out earlier, yes, of course, you know, ideally your employer will kind of have a little bit of flexibility when somebody is coming into your family. But, you know, I have yet to see a dog or a cat or any other animal work as a pallbearer. Valuing children more than pets doesn't mean you don't value pets, but I'm sure, you know, crazy cat ladies will email you. And now that I've compared them to crazy cat ladies, I'll be
good. You can share in my misery for the rest of the day.
Jim? The only good news, Greg, is that no animals were harmed at the construction of the creation of this podcast.
They never are. Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Friday for the next Three Martini Lunch.